Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. This podcast is hosted by Laura Amin, a voracious reader of romance and young adult novels. In this podcast, Laura interviews fellow readers and authors and asks them for book recommendations of what we should read next. We hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. So happy to have you back. Today, our guest is Sandra from Reading with Champagne Instagram account and blog, and we're chatting all things fiction books. Now let's get to the show. Hi, Sandra. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here to talk about books.
So excited to have you here. So tell us who you are.
So my name is Sandra Manley Eichler. By day, I am a social worker at a cancer center, but the rest of the time, I am the founder of the Reading with Champagne blog.
So what inspired you to start your book blog or your Reading with Champagne blog? So it might just be a book and something else.
Well, it's a good question. So I've actually been blogging off and on since 2010. I did it back in college after I'd gone vegetarian, and I was just blogging without any real attention to it. It was almost a way of journaling, and initially, I thought I was going to do a food blog, and it turned out that I feel like for food blogging, it's something where you really have to be really good at food, and you have to sort of be good at recipe development and stuff like that. So it just wasn't working for me. So I decided I wanted to start writing about books, actually, after one of my former coworkers was actually doing marketing for a local magazine. And so for about a year, I actually published this really cute column called The Book Nook. So I actually did print publishing for about a year. And then after that, I decided that I kind of wanted to branch out and do my own thing. So that was when the blog sort of refocused on reading. And the reason that it's Reading with Champagne is my favorite kind of wine. And I felt like I was sort of saving it for special occasions. And I thought, you know what, carpe diem, this is something that I enjoy. If I'm going to have wine, it may as well be something that I like. And that's also kind of how I feel about reading. I think that we can get a little too bogged down with what we should read. And I think we should just all embrace what we like to read. So I thought maybe I could create a space that was sort of celebratory around reading, talking about bubbles and having fun and, you know, having reading be something that you look forward to every day, just like you would a glass of bubbly. So that's kind of where the idea came from.
I love it. And I love drinking champagne. That's like my favorite drink too. So it's awesome. I'm a like-minded person who enjoys it.
I'm glad I'm not alone.
No, you're not alone. I'm like, just going to have a glass of champagne as opposed to just Pinot Grigio or Chardonnay. I just go
definitely.
Or for something sparkly and bubbly.
There you go.
So let's talk about your reading life. When do you read?
So I actually have quite a bit of a commute on my way to work, and I feel like I've always had a long commute. And so I am a very sort of on-the-go reader, and definitely I used to live in New York when I went to graduate school, and I feel like that's kind of where that got started. So my reading is almost always when I'm in motion. So when I'm on a bus or when I'm on a train or, of course, you can't drive and read at the same time unless you're doing audiobooks, but you know, at this time I take the train to work. So you try to maximize the time that I have to make sure I get my reading done. So it's really nice.
I love it. What part of New York were you living?
What part of New York? I lived in Morningside Heights. So I went to Columbia for 2 years. I went there for my master's degree. And for those New Yorkers who are listening, so my commute, so I was, you know, just in the, you know, sort of, southern tip of Harlem and had to commute to Brooklyn and then Mathbeth, New York for two separate internships. So those were really, really long commutes. So at the time it was something that I, it was just, you know, you almost had to read something and I could have read for school, but a lot of the time I ended up doing that on my lunch break or, you know, at other times of the week. So I tried to make sure I fit in something for fun so I could have some self-care too.
I love it. Yeah, that's where I start reading. Well, I've been a reader most of my life, but I used to have a 40-minute commute. So I ride about 40 miles in my commute. That was like my go-to. I live in New York, so I'm always curious to hear the
the other people who has lived here and come back and whatnot. So,
absolutely. And it's so fun to see on Bookstagram all of the New Yorkers there too. It's really, it's really fun to see. So you're also not alone in that sense.
So what do you love most about reading?
So I really like that I can be exposed to a new perspective. I always say that I love when a book makes me feel ignorant about something, that I can be completely surprised, I can be wowed, I can be educated from something. It's interesting. A lot of people will say that reading is an escape for them. And for me, that can be that way too sometimes. But sometimes it's almost an immersion into somebody else's mind too. So you're kind of escaping and seeing how somebody else is thinking. You know, it's such a privilege, the written word and sort of the, you know, if you really want to get deep, like the history of the written word and sort of, you know, when human beings first started putting pen to paper to express our thoughts, that we have a history of that that goes back centuries, I think is just one of the most amazing things ever, that we could pick up a book that was written, you know, decades, hundreds of years ago, and try to tap into what that person was thinking, without even knowing them, without having a conversation with them. So it's both a combination, I think, of just learning a new perspective and then almost empathizing, right? You want to kind of see where that other person's coming from. So I can't remember who said it. Maybe it was Stephen King, but saying that like books are sort of this portable magic. And I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So, you know, thinking about it, what would you like your reading life to look like different? Is there a magic?
Great question.
Yeah.
So it's funny because I was thinking about this a little bit when I was answering sort of when I read. So I read on a commute, and I don't know about you, but I don't want to think that I'm going to have a super long commute for the rest of my life, you know? So at some point, I don't know. At some point in my life, I'll have to have a shorter commute, you know, maybe something that's more drivable, or, you know, hopefully something that's a little bit closer to home. But my problem is I am not that person who can go to a coffee shop and just read, you know, I think it's because I've just been in motion for so long. Sometimes I can, if I'm at home on the couch and maybe I'm by myself, but I have a tendency, like if my husband's home, we'll probably just settle in and watch Netflix. So I don't really make that time for myself. And I really would like to, I'd like to be that person that could just kind of like take some time, go away for a little bit, but I feel like it kind of catches up to me. Whereas if I'm commuting, I'm on my way to work, or even if I'm, you know, on a plane, maybe I'm traveling somewhere, you're kind of trapped, and it's a good trapping. You know, it's like, okay, now is your captive time. This is your reading time, but I want to be able to expand past that. So, if anybody has any tips on that, they're more than welcome to send that to me.
Yeah, I think that's like bigger, you know, finding different ways to read or finding different ways to discover the process that you like.
Yeah.
But if you're used to and you have the commute, you have the time, that's the time where you read. So it's like,
absolutely.
You already have built in time. So, but yeah,
totally.
Sometimes, you know, letting go of Netflix and picking up a book, it's one of those things where it's like, sometimes you just need Netflix and that's okay. And give yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got it.
So how do you choose your next read? Do you keep a TBR or are you a mood reader?
I'm a little bit of both. So okay. I have kind of a ongoing reading list that I keep on Goodreads. I'm a big Goodreads person. And so if there's a book that I like or something I've heard of, I usually kind of keep tally there so I can refer back to my list of books that I want to read and kind of get a general idea about it. So unless I have a deadline of some kind from a publisher or, you know, a publicity group or something like that, where they really want to review on a specific time, I am very mood dependent. I also feel like I kind of balance back and forth, like with the tone of the book. So I don't know if you ever feel this way, like after you've had something really salty, then you immediately want to have something sweet after that, like after you've had a meal. I feel that way with books sometimes. So if I read a mystery thriller, the next book after that might be maybe a little more dramatic or something that's nonfiction, but kind of mix things up. It's kind of rare that I'll do like two of the same thing at the same time.
Yeah, I like palate cleansers. That's what I like. And it was like, after a book hangover, I need a palate cleanser. I need something that's just going to be refreshing, that's going to be light, that's going to be easy to read, that's just going to be fun. And that woman
totally
not knowing, you know, not feeling like I need to know everything about the book. It's like, yeah, just remember a little bit about it, and that's totally fine.
That's a really good point too. That like how much you want to absorb of something, right? Mm-hmm. That's really good.
Yeah. So do you keep track of the books you read? And if so, how?
Yeah. So I used to be really big into sort of physically handwriting the books that I read. And then as soon as Goodreads came out, I really started just using that. And it's really fun. And I'm, in addition to the book community, I'm really close with a lot of my coworkers at the hospital that I work at. And so when they're all on Goodreads too, it's really nice that we can all kind of come together and people can know what I'm reading without me even saying it. They can actually just come up and ask me, oh, I saw that you're reading this book today. What are your thoughts on it so far? So that's kind of how I keep track. And sort of, even if I, at the end of the year, I reflect on maybe the books I've read before, just to kind of see what I've read and, you know, take a look at that. So I like it.
I like it. Yeah. I keep track on Goodreads. I think that's, for me, it's an easy way just to know what books I read. Cause I read for quantity sometimes. So it gets confusing. I was like, did I read that book?
Exactly.
That Goodreads actually has a list, so then I can go back and be like, oh, I like this book, or I did not like this book for some reason. So
exactly.
Yeah. So what's your favorite genre?
So I think, just starting more generally, I tend to read a lot of literary fiction and mystery thrillers. I kind of go between those more often. So if you're seeing me read something, it's more likely than not going to be one of those two categories. Mm-hmm. But more specifically, probably my favorite genre is actually, and it's taken me a while to kind of get to this, but I think it's Southern Gothic books. Mm. So it's this idea of a piece of fiction focused in the South with some kind of element of repressed trauma, people who are somewhat damaged, and there could be an element of drama or even like a horror supernatural kind of feel to it. But I think there's just something really, really cool about it. My sister was actually born in Savannah, Georgia, and so I have to wonder if there's some relationship to, you know, when we lived there at a period of time, if I'm sort of returning back to it. Another bookstagrammer who I've really connected with, Stephanie Buckland, we're both in the same camp. That's just kind of our favorite. So it's nice to connect with other readers too, to see that this kind of, you know, very specific kind of book, it just kind of hits people in the right way. So I find that those are really intriguing and interesting.
So would you mind sharing one or two books within this genre that we should pick up?
Oh, great question. So let me think. One of the, I think probably one of the books that I read last year that I really liked a lot, and I think I would consider it Southern Gothic just because it's a little bit darker, is Carson McCullough's The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. Mm-hmm. And it's just a classic book that I picked up for a book club that I have at work. And it really has this sort of like dark element of sort of like dysfunctional families and, you know, people in the South and sort of the appearances they try to keep up. And it was just a really, really rich book. And then second to that, I also did a lot of theater in high school. So I was very fortunate that I had a lot of good friends who sort of encouraged reading plays. So not even just reading books, but sort of reading these dramatic pieces. And so I'm a really big fan of Tennessee Williams. Mm-hmm. And so I think that even if you have seen the movies, you know, picking up an actual copy of Streetcar Named Desire or Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, those to me are kind of quintessential Southern Gothic, that they have these sort of darker elements that are kind of blended with this sort of propriety of Southern living. And I love it. I think they're all great.
Love it. Let me check it out. So
yeah.
What are your top three books of all time? Favorite books of all time?
Oh, I love this question because you're not asking me to just say one. So it's really interesting. The Secret History by Donna Tartt is one of my favorite books. I think sometimes we also pick favorite books based on a time in our life when a book was really impactful. And not just because we really enjoyed the book, although in this case it's for both. So after graduate school, I moved back home for a little bit, and it took me a while actually to find employment, and it was kind of a little darker. I'd really felt very confident in myself when I lived in New York, and reading a book about a, you know, guy who's about to go into college who feels really displaced and then kind of finds this weird group of people in his college who are obsessed with Greek culture, and there's a murder that they're all trying to figure out. It was just, it really hit me in the right place. In addition to, I think, the writing just being really good and really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is actually the Whiskey in a Teacup, Reese Witherspoon's newest sort of coffee table lifestyle book, actually identifies Donna Tartt, I think, correctly as sort of one of these great Southern writers, even though the book itself only takes place in between California and New England. So I thought that was such a smart inclusion, because I do feel that Donna Tartt is from the South. And, you know, to sort of put her in the category of Southern writer, I at least think that that works and that that's appropriate. The two other books, I would say, going back to plays, I really enjoy Tennessee Williams' play Suddenly last summer. It's also a fantastic movie with Elizabeth Taylor. And I just love it as a play. It explores themes of mental health, repression, betrayal, homosexuality, like all these other really complicated issues that I think are just done really well in the context of a play. And then my third book, and then it took me a long time to sort of identify what it was, but I think I'm going to have to say A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. Mm-hmm. And this is a book that I've been connecting with people on a lot. It's something that is so sad, and it's such a really torturous, traumatic book, but it's so beautifully written. And, you know, seeing one character's sort of trauma lineage over time and the effect of really close friendships and sort of people who are in your corner. It's just such a beautiful book. And so I would put that as my third favorite, but I could go on.
Wow, you could have multiple favorites. I love it. So who are your go-to authors? Which authors are your autobi?
So I really love Emily Giffen. Mm-hmm. I think that she has just such a cool way of telling stories. Mm-hmm. She writes stories about women, things that women think of. It's almost like she, you know, and I don't know a ton about her writing process, although I'm a huge fan. She's also from the Chicago area, so of course I love that. But it's almost like she kind of has these what if thoughts in her head. What if this was a situation, or, you know, and she just kind of starts with an idea, lets it brew, and then it becomes this really rich story. I don't think I've ever read one of her books and not finished it within 2 days. Although it's funny, because her most recent book I haven't read yet, because I'm like saving it because I know it'll be so good. And I almost want to kind of make sure that I save it for the right time, you know? So she's definitely an auto buy for me. And then Donna Tartt, but she only writes books every 10 years. So I'm still going to be waiting for the next one.
There we go. Yeah. I read Emily Giffen's new book, and it was like by far one of my favorite ones. So savor it, enjoy it. It's timely. It's a timely book, which was like, it felt very within the times.
I'm so glad you said that, Laura. I feel like that's what a lot of people are saying. And a lot of people are saying that of the books that she's written, that this particular one is one of their favorites. So I'm going to just like wait and savor it with some bubbly. And I can't wait.
I love it. So for a book that you've read in 2018 so far.
So I looked through my Goodreads because I wanted to like see, okay, what have I read this year? Because it's December already, if you can believe it, right? So like, what have I read? And Tiare Jones's book, An American Marriage, I thought was just incredible. And a lot of people, I think, have identified that it was a book that kind of stayed with them for a long time. Mm-hmm. Very powerful, very evocative, just, yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed that book. And again, it's one of those things where, you know, if you leave a book feeling like you didn't know something, or you really need to sort of educate yourself more, I think that's always a good thing. Mm-hmm. Another book that I actually just finished last week was Rebecca Mackay's book, The Great Believers, mm-hmm. which takes place in Chicago, you know, and talks about the AIDS crisis in the mid-1980s and then flashes back and forth between that time period and 2015. And really, really impacted me on a deep level. I think just because it was so viscerally Chicago based. Mm-hmm. But I thought both of those books were really just, they stuck with me. I think they're probably my two favorite books I read this year.
Yeah. I read An American Marriage recently. I own it since February, since it came out. And for some reason I got the impression it was going to be a sad book. So I didn't pick it up. And someone mentioned the plot line was similar to another book that I like. So I was like, okay, let me pick it up. And it was so powerful. I love the characters. I love the plot. I love the how it also unravels and how it left me thinking about, you know, the outcome and what happened.
Absolutely. And I think I love that you point out that, you know, it was probably on your bookshelf for a period of time. And it's like, you just read it recently. But some of those books we keep around, you know, and we just have to find the right time to read them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And still just as powerful as the day it came out, definitely.
Yes, indeed. So what's your most anticipated new release for 2018 or 2019?
Yeah, so there's quite a few really good books that are coming out, I would say in 2019, because I think I have again, I'm more of a mood reader. So I have a general idea of what I'll probably read this month, but I don't want to sort of, you know, attach myself to anything specifically. But for 2019, I'm really excited to read An Anonymous Girl by mm-hmm. Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen, about a manipulative psychologist. Mm-hmm. It just takes me back to studying psychology in undergrad. And I think it's just one that sticks out and I'm really interested in reading it. I'm lucky enough to say that I got a galley copy. So that one I might actually finish before the end of the year. But I think, I'm just curious to see what other people think of it and sort of what the role of having a sort of psych-oriented thriller is going to mean for the general public, in addition to people who actually studied it and who were there. So mm-hmm. I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, I read it in August and it was so good. It was like, it felt like a cat and mouse game. Like it was like, she sent her here. There was another twist. She sent her doing this thing. And you're like, why is she doing all this stuff? And it was so manipulative. It was so good. But you couldn't understand how it's going to unravel. Like, how is it always going to work out? And it was a definitely great ending. So I hope you enjoy it.
See, and you read it in August. That's how, like, far ahead you are from the rest of us. So it's so great.
I knew I loved The Wife Between Us, so when I first got it, I was like, I need to read this book. It was like one of the books that I actually requested from the publisher. I was like, I need to read this book as soon as possible.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm loving this trend of women writing these books together, mm-hmm. you know, and so we're seeing more of that, especially I think in thrillers. So mm-hmm. I don't think this will be the last book that they produce together. So we'll see.
Yeah, I had the publicist for Anonymous Girl to come on the show, and she talked about how this writing duo came about. So Greer Hendricks used to work for Simon Schuster as an editor, and she decided to venture out and start writing on her own. So she brought in Sarah, who she edited a book, to co-write together, and that's how they came about. And she says they're great, they're your writers, they're really sweet and everything. But it was kind of interesting to see. They worked together beforehand and realized, you know, we have a good chemistry. Maybe this could be something. And they've been able to write blockbusters, which is kind of awesome.
I love that. I love that so much. I'm going to have to listen to that and make sure that I, you know, like, I just think that's so interesting. And there are so many other stories like that in publishing, right? Where these mm-hmm. sort of women get together and reach out to each other and sort of support one another. And I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah. So what's one book that everyone loves, but you cannot see in?
So I can't remember. I think it was published last year or the year before, but Zadie Smith came out with a book called Swing Time, and mm-hmm. it got rave reviews. People loved it. They said it was so good. And I I just dragged reading it. It took me like a month to finish it, which for people who know me, that's like not usual. I don't spend that much time on a book, but mm-hmm. I felt like I really had to give it a good shot because so many people really enjoyed it. But I feel like in hindsight, I probably should have just realized that the book just wasn't for me. I still feel like I can appreciate the good writing and that the characters were very well developed, but the actual pace of it just wasn't for me. And I did end up finishing it, but I probably could have abandoned it much earlier.
Do you DNF books or do you power through and finish the book?
You know, I historically am, it takes a lot for me to not finish a book.
Mm-hmm.
I really do try to finish it and sort of, I feel like that's a combination of a few things. I do want to give the author the due diligence of my time. And I also feel like I kind of know what I won't like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not typically picking up a book that I think, oh, this is going to be, you know, something that I don't enjoy. And so occasionally I'll sort of branch away. Like I'll maybe try reading science fiction, even though that's not something that I usually do. And you know, it really, it's so interesting. I feel like there are other people who are more in the camp of just not finishing it, right? That we have so many books to read in the world. And why should we sort of waste our time on these books that we don't enjoy? If you know that you don't enjoy it after a certain number of pages, you know, then just don't do it. So I'm a little caught. I'm a little caught on that. And I feel like maybe as I get older, I might sort of stop pushing it too much. But
mm-hmm.
I do have respect, especially for if an author sends me something or if a publicist sends me something, I do want to sort of give it kudos if I can, or, you know, just sort of read through it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, that might change.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, for me, I tend to finish work, tend to be a finisher. Make a DNF shelf on Goodreads because I started to DNF certain books and I was like, okay, I'm just going to just keep track of those just so I know. But some books are DNF, I may not finish, but I may pick it up later. So it just depends. It varies for myself in that process.
It's so funny that you say that because a couple of weeks ago, I actually posted on Instagram and I said I had a couple of these books that I wasn't finishing, but I didn't know quite how to track it on Goodreads because I read it. I just mm-hmm. didn't like it enough to finish it. So I was like, what category do I put it in? And a lot of people recommended having that DNF shelf. So I started one myself and that has been super helpful in terms of categorizing what is finished versus not finished. So
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I was like, I kept wanting to, and it's like, I don't want to have currently reading because I'm not currently reading this book. So I was like, I don't want to just remove the tag and not unshelve it. I just want to now keep track of those. So
exactly.
So what's your favorite film to movie adaptation or book to movie adaptation? Or what book should you read about that?
It's such a hard question for me because my dad actually teaches photography and film and has for several years. So I grew up in a very movie friendly household. So in addition to books, I also love movies too. And so I think it's really interesting. I really love, this is kind of, you know, going back a little bit, but the adaptations for both Rosemary's Baby and The Stepford Wives, those two books were written by the same author, Ira Levin. And I loved the books. I thought they were really, really good, good drama, good sort of, I guess, not really political, I guess a political stance, but really talking about this time period. And I think that they actually transcend time quite a bit. And what's really interesting is for the classic version of Rosemary's Baby, it's considered one of the most faithful adaptations to a film because when the producers and when the director, you know, were working on it, many of them were not aware that they had kind of poetic license and that they could change kind of really whatever they wanted once they bought the rights to it. So that little bit of misknowledge makes it a very faithful adaptation to the point that there are many scenes in the movie where you have direct quotes from the book where things move pretty sequentially as it does in the book. And so it's a really interesting study in how, you know, it's possible to really make a very good adaptation of a movie. But I feel like The Stepford Wives is kind of the same way, that I thought that it just, they did a really good job and it was really scary. Both movies are very scary, but they are meant to be, I think, a little bit more like social commentary, more drama too. Mm-hmm. I really like them.
I love it. What is your go-to book recommendation?
Well, you mean like when I'm recommending to folks that they're just like, hey, I just need a good book, right?
Yep.
Well, I think certainly a lot of it will depend on who the reader is. So there may be a couple of things that I try to point the person in the direction of something that I think they would like specifically. But the one book lately that I've recommended that everybody has loved is Taylor Jenkins Reid's book, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Mm-hmm. And everyone that I've recommended it to has loved it. And I loved it. I thought it was such a good book. Drama. It's, you know, spanning multiple decades of time. I just thought it was, I thought it was really good. And it's like, it's light enough that you're still kind of in that space where like you're invested in the characters, but you can still, like, I don't know how else to put it. It's just, it's still light enough that it like, it's still such a page turner and just a really good, good story. But so, so well crafted. And I think she's also a really good writer of nonfiction pieces. So I really love Taylor Jenkins Reid. I think she's such a great author. I'm curious. She could just, she'll be coming out with Daisy Jones and the Six. It's another arc I have to read. But her pieces online on her website, just talking about becoming a writer and what it's like to be a woman these days and sort of navigating all of these multiple responsibilities. She's just very well-rounded. But that book in particular is something I recommend to everybody.
Yeah, I love Taylor Jenkins Reid. I love The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Like, I read it over the summer and it was so good. So
yeah,
I did read Daisy Jones and the Six. I, you know, there are certain authors that when I get a galley, I'll pick them up right off. And that was one of them. And the best way I can describe it is like watching Almost Famous or reading a good Rolling Stone magazine article. It's so good. It's like really good. It's like there's a love story, but there's no love story. There's a rise and there's sex, drugs, and rock and roll. There's a rise and fall of a band. It's like it just brings you all these different characters, all the different things, and it's just an interview format. So it's really good.
You're making me want to read that right now, especially after seeing Bohemian Rhapsody a few weeks ago. My mind has been in very much a rock and roll state of mind. Maybe that should be my next book to pick up.
So tell us where we can find you online.
Well, you can find all of my book reviews at www.readingwithchampagne.com. And my Instagram handle is @readingwithchampagne. So come on over, tell me what you're reading, tell me what bubbles you're drinking these days. I'd love to hear it. And thank you so much for having me, Laura. I hope we get to talk again soon. I love talking about books with you. And I think that this is just a great book community. And I can't wait to hear more of your podcast.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra, for a great list of book recommendations. For a detailed list of books mentioned in this podcast, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/84. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. This will help get the podcast discovered by new audiences. For the month of December, I'm giving away a hardback new release for one lucky winner as a thank you for leaving a review on iTunes. This giveaway is open internationally. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you soon.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.